喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵喵And it was very wild. So I thought we could recover from the super realness that was Roar and slip into something a bit more comfortable, like CGI. JK, it's still very uncomfortable. That's right, this week we're talking about Cats. From 2019. Yeah, 2019. And I totally did not intend to put two feline movies back to back. I somehow underestimated how lion heavy Roar would be. I know, I'm really incredible sometimes. And if that last statement made your eyes roll, wait until I tell you how I came to watch this movie. I would like to start by apologizing to my domestic partner, Tarek, and second, to my cat, Cowboy Bebop. So, Cats 2019 specifically is on my list because I was alive and social in 2019, and I was amongst millions who were disturbed by this star-studded freak show. I'm also a... It's time you found out. I mean, you probably already know, but it's time for me to come clean. I am a theater kid. Yeah, that hurts to say. That hurts for me to say because I understand theater kids, but I also don't understand theater kids. But then again, I painfully understand. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm a theater kid. Shocker. Annoying girl with a podcast. Theater kid? What? Yeah. But I have always heard of Cats, the musical Cats. I've always heard of it. And growing up outside of theater, Cats is a joke. Inside of theater, it was bold and innovative. And then there is that really good song from Cats, Memories. How'd it go?
Memories, something, something in memories, all alone in my memories.
I don't think that's exactly how it goes, but you get it, right? That's the song. I didn't know that song was from Cats. I also didn't know that Andrew Lloyd Webber did not die hundreds of years ago. He's literally in his 70s right now. I don't know. I have a learning disorder and I grew up in a farming town. And to be honest, everyone talks about Andrew Lloyd Webber like he's Mozart. And his name is very founding father. Okay. And also, it is just so unimportant to know who he is. I said it. Don't worry, I'll get into it. Oh, and just so you know, it is important to know who he is for this podcast episode. So for that, I am sorry. You want to know something else? About this episode, I put this movie, Cats, I put it in last minute. I originally picked to cover Puss in Boots 2, The Last Wish. But here we are talking about a different CGI cat. Okay, what happened? All right, so this is what happened. I'm not proud of it. So originally, I picked Puss in Boots 2 because my friends told me to watch it. Casey told me to see it. like almost a year ago. And, you know, and Kay would ask me, did you watch it yet? Did you watch it yet? Did you watch it yet? And I was very excited to watch Puss in Boots 2. Tarek, my partner, was also excited for it. But I was like, no, my podcast. I need to go in blind. My art. We can't watch it yet. We can't watch it until it's time. So Tarek and I waited for months and months to watch Puss in Boots 2. Then the time comes. It's time to watch Puss in Boots 2. So I was like, we gotta make this a moment. So I made Tarek.
I'm so sorry.
I made Tarek endure a 2-day marathon of Shrek and Puss in Boots movies because I had only seen the first Shrek, right? So we watched Shrek 2. Loved it. Puss in Boots had like 3 lines. Saw Shrek 3. Absolute dog shit. And I felt like Justin Timberlake bought some kind of Shrek experience thing and he got to be in a Shrek movie. I didn't like that one, but, you know, I'm sure I laughed. Oh, Shrek 4? I liked that one. I liked it, and I really like how dark it got. It was a really dark version of the first Shrek movie, which I know really well. I really know the first Shrek very well. And I just want to say, even though I have only seen the first Shrek, I think I have about like 100 hours under my belt of watching that movie. I could recite it as a kid. That Hallelujah song was like the prettiest thing I had ever heard. And I used that VHS tape like a fucking cassette tape. We watched Puss in Boots 1 and it was very good, super funny. And then we watched Puss in Boots 2 and it was incredible. The animation was new and cool and collaborative. The storyline was very adult and dark, but also something that we all have to face, right? Where we're all afraid of death. The performances were good. You know, God, everything was just so fucking good. But I knew I couldn't cover it. It was too satisfying. I didn't have much curiosity or inspiration after watching it, but I loved it. And I would definitely watch it again. And it is an incredible movie. But I didn't know what to do with it. It was like over my head. It's way better than me. And also, while I was watching it, I just kept thinking about cats, the CGI cats. I don't know how or why cats popped into my head, but I mean, I was watching a CGI marathon to build up to a story about a CGI cat, and there was music. I don't know. I also could have been like a bit unrested. But I made the super frustrating decision to set the incredibly beautiful and touching Puss in Boots 2 to the side. And I'm gonna go pick up from the forbidden side of Netflix, Cats from 2019, because I have so many questions. And to be honest, I don't think I'm done with Puss in Boots 2. I'm still thinking about it. I just don't know what to do with it yet. But anyway, on to Cats. So I decided to take on Cats 2019. And then I had this wild bout of insomnia. Like, I'm still trying to deal with it. Like, throughout this entire Cats experience, I have not slept. Anyway, I accidentally stayed awake for like 30-ish hours. It sucked. But it could have been karma for, you know, making this decision and putting Tarek through all of that. So on hour 22 of being awake, I deemed it a great time to watch Cats 2019 for the first time. And to be honest, I think being sleep deprived helped me get into it a bit more. I felt like I was drunk halfway through it, and I kept getting hypnotized. And then I had a really wild, like, crafting fit. Oh, what's a crafting fit? Well, that's where you laugh so hard you cry, and then your trauma-riddled body senses that you're crying, and your body tries to sob. But your funny bone is genuinely tickled by whatever made you laugh in the first place, so you keep laughing at what you were laughing at, and then you also start to laugh at your trauma response, and then you lose control, and people always stare. It is very embarrassing and it happens to me a lot, but I've embraced it at this point. This is the first time I cry laughed by myself, and it was a fucking release. And of course, I had this fucking fit when Jennifer Hudson had her huge solo that I had been waiting for. I think I was laughing at the cat names. Oh, it still gets me. Sorry. It still gets me. I called those like little twin cats, those cats that are like, oh, I'm this and she's that. And we're like causing a ruckus in this house, right? I called them piss and shit. Oh, God. And it got me because they allowed piss and shit to do a lot of stuff, but they wouldn't let Jennifer Hudson in. And I'm like, hey, come on. She deserves it. Piss and shit just drugged you guys. Like, let her in. And they do. And they pick her and she dies. Throughout this entire episode, I will be sleep deprived, just so you know. Researching it, sleep deprived. Watching it, sleep deprived. Writing it, sleep deprived. Performing it, sleep deprived. Editing it, sleep deprived. All right. But you know what? I'm going to work through it. This isn't my first insomniac rodeo. Baby, this was what my 20s were like. I didn't sleep a wink in my 20s. Oh, because I was partying too much? No, because I cannot sleep. With all that said, let's move on to my first take, shall we? Okay, everybody, this is the part of the podcast where I herd a bunch of cats into a time machine and we blast off into the past to see what my first reaction was after watching Cats for the very first time. So if we could all just in an orderly fashion, please. Okay, Dinkledork, if you could just please stop sniffing the butt of Smiggle Smack. Thank you so much. Oh, Fiddle Twat, thank you for coming. I thought you weren't gonna be here. Oh, and look at that, it's Coddle Dick. I'm so happy all of you anthropomorphic cats could make it. So if you could just please use your human feet and human hands to get yourself secured in your seat, and we'll go ahead and we will take off. All right, here we go. Okay. All right, it's me, past Lucky. I am here. I just got off the couch and sat in front of my mic. No, I took a shower first. I totally forgot about my first take, but just saw Cats for the very first time in my life. I am very curious, like a little kitten. I'm very curious as to how they got everyone. I'm really curious as to how all those like big name, big time, super serious actors and Taylor Swift and Jason Derulo and Joseph Gordon and Rebel Wilson. How did you get all of them on the same production? And how is that production Cats? You know, 2019, like this rocked everyone's world in such a way. It was not accepted. I don't remember it being accepted at all by the public. Because it looks terrifying, and it is terrifying. Why was the CGI so bad? It was really good, like the CGI was really good, but then it was also really bad and disturbing, like Polar Express level disturbing. And then I made myself laugh really hard, and it still tickles me. And like, I am so tired, and I think I just got very slap happy. And Cats, what's the deal with it? Like, what is the deal with Cats? Like, why do we keep doing it? Why does it seem like these actors love it so much? Like, because then I'm just like, is this a children's play? And then, you know, and I wasn't anticipating all of it to be music all the time. Fuck, I cannot string my thoughts together. This is gonna be hell to edit. Oh, this is gonna be so bad to edit. My eyes are not open right now. My eyes are closed. All right, let's get it together. Wow, I'm hitting a wall as we fucking speak. So Cats, I thought it was crazy. Idris Elba, he was so shiny when all of his clothes came off. And then Dame Judi Dench, Sir Ian McGregor. I hope I'm saying their names right. I don't understand it. I don't understand Cats. I don't understand the appeal. Currently, I am happy that it exists. And the fact that I just saw what I just saw with the cast that I just saw is insane. Wow. Oh, God. Why did the cats have hands? Kind of gross. Ugh, you know, it would have been great if the plot revolved around like an experiment gone horribly, horribly wrong. Dun 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 dun. We're Jellicle cats, Jellicle cats, Jellicle cats, Jellicle cats, mystical cats, boxing cats, cats that know cats, cats that acrobats, acrobatic cats, and the diabetic cats, and the cats in the cradle. Okay, I cannot keep my eyes open. All right. Now, let's go into the future. Let's go into the future. We're going into the future to figure out what I found during research. To figure out what I found during research. To figure out what I found during research. Wow! Jennifer Hudson. No. It was Taylor Swift that scared me. Okay, this is Future Lucky, and that is enough of that. Moving on. So, what is Cats even about? Like, what is it about? I could do my 1 minute recap. That's where I try to recap the entire movie in under a minute or less. But this movie is jarring enough, and I feel like I have hit my annoying quota for this episode. I'm just gonna take a stab. Just take a big old stab in the dark as to what the hell this movie is even about. So cats, right? So this cat gets thrown into an alley in a bag, right? She's in a bag and she gets thrown into an alley. And then all these anthropomorphic cats, they come out like snapping out of the shadows. And then they kind of like greet her. And then all these cats are singing and dancing, and there's no dialogue really, except for like the lyrics and stuff. And lucky for this cat, you know, this cat got dropped off in the alley on the night of the Jellicle Ball. And the Jellicle Ball is crazy, but long story short, this cat queen at the Jellicle Ball, she picks who deserves to die. And these anthropomorphic cats do this every year, and they don't specify if that's like human years, or cat years, or animorph years. So anyway, the god cat picks the super sad cat that everyone was really mean to, and then the sad cat climbs into a chandelier, and that chandelier is actually a hot air balloon, and then that sad cat flies off into the sky and probably like starves to death or suffocates or lands in the ocean. They also don't tell us how they get the air balloon back. They do this every year. So they don't tell us how they get the hot air balloon back, the hot air balloon that's connected to the chandelier. But anyway, everyone is happy about it. And then all the cats just kind of go back to doing whatever. And that's Cats. Oh, and then there was like a mean magician cat, and then there was like a nice magician cat, and they like magicked. That's Cats. Now let's talk about T.S. Eliot. What is this episode? Okay, Cats, it's loved, it's bananas, it's wild, it's laughed at, it's revived by the confident. But where did this all start? It started with the famous and very influential poet, T.S. Eliot. Okay, so depending on what you know about T.S. Eliot, you either know about the flowery, proud story of T.S. Eliot being like the godfather of modern poetry who expresses his struggles through stoic and still modern poetry, or you know T.S. Eliot as a fragile man who is a fascist sympathizer, friends with Nazis, scared of women, wrongfully institutionalizing his first wife, and is afraid of his own feelings. Which version do you think we're gonna talk about today? Yeah, the fucked up shit. T.S. Eliot is a famous poet from the early 1900s who has written some notable works that I don't really care about. I have heard of him. You have heard of him as well. So, to make this very long, fucked up story about T.S. Eliot short, because there is also Andrew Lloyd Webber to discuss, and the cast and the story, there's a lot.
Especially production. What the fuck?
I researched this guy, T.S. Eliot, and I thought I would find the same typical inspirational or tragic story of a poet. So throughout my research, I found that T.S. Eliot was a fascist sympathizer. He never called himself a fascist, but he labeled himself as a royalist. And basically, to him, that means he believes that the church and the monarchs should have rule over the state. So like no separation between church and state. And that the kingdom or whatever, whoever they're ruling over, right? The kingdom makes up the body and the well-being of the king or queen. And that body needed to be pure. Like white Christian supremacy pure. Super gross and nasty. Oh, and another thing I found out, much like Steve Bannon, T.S. Eliot is also a fan of French writer and anti-Semitic philosopher Charles Morris. T.S. Eliot was also good friends with British writer and painter Wyndham Lewis. And Wyndham Lewis loved Hitler. Yeah. Wyndham, he literally wrote something where he called Hitler a man of peace. Yes, and this is after. This is after. If not during the Holocaust. And T.S. Eliot was also an anti-Semite himself, and he was not ashamed of it. He wrote a bunch of racist shit in his writing that was called After Strange Gods. Like, he talks about separating people by their race and religions, and races shouldn't mix, and everyone should believe in the same bullshit. His bullshit, whatever bullshit he likes to believe in, which is like super Catholic, Christian, it's just like all the toxic stuff about Christianity. He also wrote something weird about fantasizing about beating and controlling a woman. Like, he said he wanted to choke out and maim his love because then she would be repulsive to everyone else, but beautiful to him because her injuries and disfigurements would be a sweet little reminder to what he did to her, aka his power. He also found oil paintings of martyrs and murders erotic. Ah, is this a true crime podcast? What? And with these oil paintings, these murder, like oil paintings, he said that he prefers the victims in the paintings to be women. Oh, there's more. And T.S. Eliot was also terrified of women. Literally, the sight of a woman would terrify him back in college. And he was like really against feeling his emotions. I don't know why I think being afraid of women and emotions like go hand in hand. Oh, toxic masculinity. That's why I think those two go hand in hand. And speaking of toxic masculinity, T.S. Eliot has enough bigotry for everyone. That's right, fellas. You too have caught the critical eye of T.S. Eliot. Yeah, he had a rigid view on masculinity and what a man should and shouldn't be. Oh, and back to being afraid of emotions. I kind of skimmed over that. No, he's not about emotions. A poet that does not like emotions. He thought that there was only two emotions people felt, ordinary and perverse. Looking into any other emotion was a waste of time. And y'all, it sounds like T.S. Eliot thinks literally anything that expresses individualism is perverse. And another thing you might find when you start to look up T.S. Eliot is his first wife, Vivian Haywood, spelled H-A-I-G-H hyphen W-O-O-D, in case you wanted to look into her. The information out there is very conflicting. Vivian Haywood was his first wife. And yeah, this is where my research got the most conflicting. When I watched super fancy documentaries with historians with fancy accents, and they're talking about T.S. Eliot, they mention that his first wife is like deranged and like had to be committed. Not only did she have to be committed, but they were also like, oh, poor T.S. Eliot had to go through that, you know? Then I watch scholars on YouTube who have studied for years and read books and can cite it. They actually say that T.S. Eliot got his wife admitted against her will after she had an affair with his friend. That sounds very in character to me. Then I also heard that T.S. Eliot's new wife ended up getting the diary of Vivian, including diaries and journals she had while Vivian was with Eliot. His second wife, apparently she had all of that shit copyrighted. She had all of Vivian's journals copyrighted, so like no one could use them, which is like very sneaky and very sus. There's something in those journals. Then I heard it was Vivian's brother that like got her admitted. And then I heard like Vivian was like wandering around the streets, mumbling some weird stuff. There's a lot of versions about what happened to Vivian. All we can like know is that Vivian died in a mental hospital and she possibly took her own life on purpose. So T.S. Eliot, he married his second wife after Vivian died in the mental hospital. He was in his 60s, and this new copywriting wife of his was his 30-year-old secretary. Cool. Cool, cool, cool. Guy is just so cool. But I'm going to be real. It seems like, and this is an assumption of mine, that T.S. Eliot is like closeted and hated himself for it. He was either gay or he was ace or something. He knew deep down that he could never truly have a wife or live up to his own standards as to what a hetero husband should be. And he got super spiteful, and he's obviously so filled with hate that he wrongfully admitted his first wife after the affair, right? And please remember that women were admitted to these places for normal ass shit, like having a period or just being alive and unwanted. So yeah, you could totally admit your wife against her will in the early 1900s because women were just property of their husbands. And admitting her for adultery? This is a wild woman! Of course, the public was on T.S. Eliot's side. You know, when all this came out, of course, it's like, oh, poor Eliot, poor Eliot. Like, no, he was weird. He was weird and he probably drove her crazy. How about that? Huh? How about that? But no... It sounds like Vivian might have had some, like, mental struggles, but I believe Vivian was, like, just as weird as the rest of us. And T.S. Eliot is the one who only believes in two emotions, and he and his friends could count as a little Hitler fan club, and T.S. Eliot sounds like a serial killer. Like, he literally sounds like a serial killer right now. The oil painting thing? Serial killer. That weird poem? Killer. And you put on top that he's, like, racist and, like, weird, has, like, weird views? Yeah. He just has all the characteristics. And T.S. Eliot is really influential, even today. So yeah, just another bigot of a white man influencing the culture of today. Yay! And if you want to know more about this side of T.S. Eliot, I highly recommend watching on YouTube the video labeled The Baffling Politics of Cats 2019 and T.S. Eliot on Maggie Mae Fish's channel. That's Maggie Mae, M-A-G-G-I-E, Mae, M-A-E, Fish, F-I-S-H. Go over there, check it out. It's really cool. She really breaks this down incredibly. And she also dresses up. And she shares her sites and where you can find these examples and these texts. She also dresses up. She had a great cat look. Okay. So how does this Nazi-loving, woman-hating, royalist piece of shit of a bigot relate to the flamboyant spectacle that is cats? Well, he wrote a majority of it. So, T.S. Eliot wrote this collection of poems about cats for some young relatives of his, and then later he turned it into a book called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. And the poems from this book are used as the lyrics for the songs in Cats. And I have gathered that Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats was read to a generation of children. And one of these children was Andrew Lloyd Webber, who I cannot stress enough is not from the Victorian era. He's from the 70s, 80s, and today. Literally, he is still making shit today. So now that I have unfortunately introduced you to T.S. Eliot's truth, let's see how we do with one of the most recognized composers of all time. All right. So Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? So Andrew Lloyd Webber is this composer. He was born in London. His parents were composers and musicians. His brother is like a world famous cellist. And Andrew was like writing musicals since he was 9. A child prodigy or whatever. I don't think he's a child prodigy, but whatever. So One day in the 70s, Andrew Lloyd Webber decides to test out his musical capabilities. Or maybe it was just a shit ton of coke he was on. There are rumors that he was like on a lot of drugs when he was writing Cats. You know, I also kind of speculate that he was too. And then the internet got scrubbed. That is my hardly educated opinion. But whether it was coke or creative curiosity, Andrew Lloyd Webber decides to put his favorite children's book into song. Can he make the poetry of T.S. Eliot into music? Yeah, he can, and he did. So he made song after song, and even was able to have like showings of this collection of songs, and then he decided to turn it into a musical. So he strung a storyline together, and we get Cats, the musical. But what did I find out about Andrew Lloyd Webber? Well, while I was losing my battle to insomnia, I decided in the wee hours of the night to go on a deep dive on Andrew Lloyd Webber. For starters, he looks like he would secretly place eggs in your pocket and then he would like snicker and then tiptoe away into the shadows. Yeah, that was a rude attack on a stranger's looks, but I don't really care, and I am being nice. So, much like researching Eliot, I had to comb through a lot of circle jerking to find anything real and detailed about Andrew Lloyd Webber. Like, when the research started, all I saw was all of his awards. He was knighted. He was a part of the House of Lords. I didn't know what that meant. He gets lifetime achievement awards here and there, and everyone talks about him like he has superpowers. Then I went to YouTube and I saw a behind-the-scenes video about the original production of Cats. Like, I think it was when they were originally turning Cats into a feature-length movie. And instead of seeing this prodigy with superpowers, I saw this manipulative man with an elegant accent going on a power trip and calling all the work everyone was doing dreadful, and that he is terribly displeased. It also looked like someone else, under his obvious strict direction, was writing out the orchestral music. He had someone else come in for the lyrics too, like Tim Rice, who has written a shit ton of lyrics for Webber's musicals. And Trevor Nunn, he wrote the lyrics to Memories, like the song that probably keeps this show Cats in business. But in the documentary, Andrew Lloyd Webber's behavior was like portrayed as, well, that's the genius for you. Like the guy that was writing all of the music, oh my God, you could tell that he had it with this condescending composer. That is Andrew Lloyd Webber. Literally, Andrew Lloyd Webber would make that guy redo and redo and redo and redo shit. And it's like, dude, I get it. I've obsessed like that. And sometimes it's worth it. But God, Andrew Lloyd Webber was a fucking dick about it. Every shot he was in, it was almost like a montage of him just going, that's absolutely dreadful. I thought I had mentioned this, but I'll mention it again. I'm so unhappy with this. Absolutely unhappy. I cannot explain how unhappy I am. Like, I didn't see him scream or throw stuff. Personally, I would prefer that to someone with a posh accent and a lot of money talking down to me when I am doing what they ask. Because it's like, if the guy is getting it wrong over and over and over again, Andrew, let him go. Or do it yourself, Mr. Prodigy. Get someone else. Like, I think that guy was doing everything right. But Webber wasn't remembering what he had said because he probably said a lot and he has too big of an ego to admit he was wrong, which is so annoying. Andrew Lloyd Webber isn't also toxic when he's on set. He's also toxic when he's in another country on vacation or whatever. So in the recent years, there was a lot of controversy about his musical Cinderella. There was a lot of drama about opening the show during COVID, and Andrew Lloyd Webber said he was ready to be arrested when they opened the show during the Omicron outbreak. Cool, fucking asshole. Cool. Yeah. And his argument for opening up a giant musical during a giant pandemic, his argument was something like, oh, the actors have to work. We have to survive. I can't believe that we are being put out like this. Blah, 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 blah. It was very self-serving. And he proves that himself. And honestly, all capitalists were outraged during lockdowns. How are we going to make money? It's like, don't worry about that. How are we going to survive this? But we need money. Shut up. You don't need money. And also, opening the show during a pandemic will not fix anything. It'll pay a few people, and it will make the problem worse and last longer. Also, during Cinderella, there was a lot of drama about casting and reviews. So an American critic was like writing about Cinderella while it was going on in the West End. So Andrew Lloyd Webber saw this critique or this critic's column in whatever country he was vacationing in. Then he Skyped the cast, or he like Zoomed or whatever, telecommuted. So he comes up on video and video chats with the cast and crew to talk about the review, but it wasn't talking. It was Andrew Lloyd Webber berating the entire cast, like nonstop. And it even caused the show that day to start 30 minutes later because a lot of cast members were contemplating walking out after being treated so horribly. They didn't, but those actors were preparing their exit after that, which calls for a replacement cast. Then they're bringing in a replacement cast. And they got the replacement cast and rehearsals, costume fittings, and then the original cast, you know, they're finishing up. And then all of a sudden, without warning, the UK production was shut down. And Andrew Lloyd Webber's production company, the Really Useful Group, I hate that name. Anyway, the Really Useful Group didn't tell a single actor that they were fired. Instead, the entire cast, both original and replacement cast, found out via social media posts and online articles that the show has closed. So all these actors were blindsided and put out on their ass. Whatever happened to caring about working actors, Andrew? But this is not the first time that he did this either. He did this same exact thing to Patti LuPone. So back in the 90s, Patti LuPone helped Andrew's musical, Sunset Boulevard, take the fuck off. She was the lead. She created this character, and she's Patti fucking LuPone. She beat out Meryl Streep for this part. And just to put this into perspective, Meryl was fighting for this. So she beat out 90s Meryl Streep for this part. Then, oh, looky here, a critic released a review calling Patti LuPone crap. And Andrew Lloyd Webber flipped out, even though Patti had like over 100 standing ovations during her time with the show. So then, all of a sudden, Patti starts to hear about these rumors that she's going to be replaced. So Patti goes to Andrew and she asks, she's like, what's up? What's going on? And he lies. And he said it was Paramount, the production company, that Paramount was the one who made all these casting decisions. But then Paramount said and released a statement saying that they had no play in casting and left all of that up to Andrew Lloyd Webber. And then Patti LuPone reads that she's getting replaced via the papers. Like she was reading the paper and then gets like blindsided that she's getting replaced by Glenn Close. So she decided to run out her contract and take this fucking nerd to court. She took him to court and she won. Because you can't just fire people like that. Not over here in the US. It's crazy that the UK has it worse with like the contracts over there. So he tried to screw over Patti LuPone and she took him to court and she won over $1 million and gifted herself a brand new swimming pool. And she called it, quote, the Andrew Lloyd Webber Memorial Pool. Bent, Andrew. Oh, and there's more bullcrap. Ready? He sat as a conservative member on the House of Lords, and he hardly does anything unless it's to vote in horrible legislation that would damn the poor people of which it rules. Oh, and he flew in on his private plane to cast his vote on this. Disgusting. Oh, there's more. And he's also accused of plagiarizing on multiple accounts. So there are counts of his work sounding very similar to very old songs from back in the day, and even Pink Floyd. And the Pink Floyd accusation is so undeniable to me. So, Pink Floyd. Album. Metal. Song. Echoes. Listen to that song, and you will hear it, the famous opening to The Phantom of the Opera. Bum, 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 bum. Like, that part, like, it is undeniable to me. And Andrew Lloyd Webber talks so much about being like inspired by pop and rock. It's not uncanny to think of him like listening to something like Pink Floyd in his private plane. But he didn't have a private plane back then because, you know, Echoes, it's from 1971, and then The Phantom of the Opera is from 1986. So it sounds like you stole it to me. But I do not like this guy. I do not trust him. And also, only some of his stuff slaps. Now, we really, really know where Cats came from. So, let's talk about this Animorph musical, shall we? Oh my god. So, production. Production for Cats for the 2019 film seems like hell on earth. So, we all know that the CGI was really, really bad and disturbing. Want to know why? I have two words for you. Tom Hooper, the film's director, Tom Hooper, another English white guy. And to be fair, T.S. Eliot is from the U.S., but he renounced his citizenship and he lived out the rest of his life in London. These three dudes are giving London a very bad rap. Or maybe they're just validating the reputation. Tom Hooper is a director known for King's Speech, Les Mis, and Danish Girl, to name a majority. Nothing about CGI, nothing about Cats, but there is a musical, so there's that. Well, Tom Hooper sucks ass because he was allegedly an absolute dickhead during production. Just to start, I was wondering why he decided to go with an almost total CGI version of this movie. Because the original Cats had incredible and super colorful and amazing costumes and makeup. Like, if you hated the musical, at least you got to look at some visually entertaining costumes and makeup. And it turns out that the movie, the 2019 Cats movie, was going to have costumes and makeup and even prosthetics. Prosthetics. But due to the film's budget, they had to go without the costumes and makeup. Tom Hooper also said that the prosthetics limited facial expressions. Okay, I get that. I get the facial expression stuff. I get throwing out the prosthetics. But no makeup or costumes? Like, the budget said no? You have Taylor Swift. Was it Taylor Swift? You can't have makeup and costumes? Give me some fake fur and a glue gun, and I will have a Chewbacca outfit by tomorrow. And the makeup, you know, I already got makeup. So it's like, what the hell happened to the money? I'll give you two words. Tom Hooper. God, this guy had no right taking on this movie at all. He was so unqualified. So Tom Hooper was not able to understand half-rendered CGI scenes. And he needed to review these scenes, so the artists would give him half-rendered scenes because that's how you do it. But he couldn't understand what he was looking at, so he demanded that the visual effects animators, VFX artist for short, he demanded that the VFX artists, that they fully complete the scene and then show it to him for review. And when he was shown these completed CGI scenes, he would berate and belittle the artist. He would call their work garbage. And he was like humiliating individuals during calls and email. Okay, let's talk about it for a second. So to make something completely rendered or completed in VFX, there is a shit ton of work that goes into it. There's layers, there's details, shadow, movement, individual cat hairs, and you add on these layers and details in the final product, not in the sample scenes that need to be approved by the director just so you can move forward. That's like asking someone to build a house. You give inspiration, but then you refuse to look at the blueprints, the frame, or the foundation. And then when this house is completed, you look at it and you go, wrong, absolutely wrong, and you make them build it again. Like, tear it down and build it again. So Tom Hooper not being able to understand CGI was so damning for Cats 2019. And it cost this production a lot of time and a lot of money. Like, I'm telling you, building a house, that's a lot of time, that's a lot of money. Like, he was asking for fully completed scenes. And then he gets these scenes and he goes, it's trash, it's garbage. This takes a lot of time. This takes so much time. Like, James Cameron spends a lot of time on Avatar. Like, he brags about it. He's like, oh my God, I spent like half a decade on this. And you've seen the Avatar movies, you know, like, it's very CGI heavy. It's kind of like the same thing. Same exact movie. It took the Cats team, it took them 6 months to produce a 2-minute trailer, leaving them only 4 months to complete the 110-minute movie. The VFX team worked day and night on this piece of shit. People who worked on the VFX said that they were forced to work 80 to 90 hours a week, and some artists stayed in their office for 3 days straight. And the final cut of the movie was not completed until a few hours before the premiere. And the original version of Cats had so many CGI errors that Universal told movie theaters that there was going to be an updated digital package available for download on December 22nd after the film's release. And releasing an updated version on a film that is released on this scale is completely unheard of. Also, there was another VFX artist that said that Cats in the original, like, not the original Cats, but like their original first copy of Cats 2019, that those cats had visible buttholes, but then they were taken out. Meaning that someone had to go in and edit out every butthole that could be seen. I wonder if they missed any. Oh, God. And then the visual effects artists, like, they suffered even more after this movie came out. This movie shut down at least 2 VFX companies, leaving a lot of artists who worked on Cats out of work. And they were also humiliated by the public. Like, you can't put this thing on your resume. It's a joke. Like, this job did nothing but ruin careers. And Tom Hooper was a dick the whole time. Like, if this movie was made by people who were connected to it consensually and everyone was, like, really into it and worked hard and appreciated each other and worked as a team, I would be like, you go, guys. You keep making awful movies if your heart desires. Your teamwork is an art in and of itself. Instead, Cats from 2019 is a movie made by capitalism. The songs were from poems of a bigot, and it was composed and executively produced by a rich little coward. And that's exactly how you get Cats. Mm-hmm. And the only cool-ish things I can say about the production of this movie is that the singing was live. Even though I'm not convinced it was live for everyone, it probably was. This cast was crazy, and they're pretty famous. Speaking of the cast, this movie had Dame Judi Dench, Taylor Swift, Idris Elba, Sir Ian McKellen, Rebel Wilson, James Corden, and I know I was saying Ian and James's name wrong in my first take, I'm fully aware. And then they had the one and the literal only Jennifer Hudson. Every time she sings, I'm introduced to sounds that I didn't even know existed, and then I cry. And when I first saw this, I was like, I need to know why and how every cast member said yes. But now, after T.S. Eliot, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tom Hooper, the edited out buttholes, like, I'm tired. I'm so tired. I'm tired. You're probably tired too. Not just because I haven't slept a wink throughout the entirety of this experience, but like, God. And all these actors are rich and they're popular, and I'm sure they saw the names of Andrew Lloyd Webber and the director of King's Speech, and maybe they even saw, like, who else was going to be in it and said, you know, how can I say no? How can this possibly go wrong? It's Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's Taylor Swift. It's the director from the Academy Award-winning King's Speech, you know? And I'm sure some people had an emotional attachment to this musical. Either they grew up on that little book by T.S. Eliot, Or maybe they had like a connection to it because they have done this show on stage before. I know Dame Judi Dench, and you gotta say Dame Judi Dench because it's fun. Well, Dame Judi Dench, she was actually supposed to be a part of the original cast of Cats, but she had to withdraw due to an injury. Whew! So, how did everyone respond to this? You don't remember? Well, let's wrap this thing up. So how did the public react to Cats? So for starters, here's a review from Rotten Tomatoes that kind of sums up how everyone feels. And it goes like this. Despite its formidable cast, this Cats adaptation is a clawful mistake that will leave most viewers begging to be put out of their misery. I remember in 2019 when this thing came out, everyone was like, oh my god, like Donald Trump is president, all of our favorite stars are dying, and now we're getting a star-studded CGI version of Cats. But after like learning about T.S. Eliot, his work would resurface like this under a Trump presidency. It was a horrible time. God, it's November right now, and I really hope he is not president again when this comes out. God, we will not make it. Anyway, everyone hated this movie. Critics hated it. Moviegoers hated it. The VFX team hated it. Andrew Lloyd Webber said he didn't like it. And also, the furry community found it to be disturbing. Cats was nominated for a Golden Globe somehow and didn't win, but it did clean up at the Raspberry Awards. Or as some people call them, the Razzies, which is like a parody award show, which I have never seen. I've heard of the Razzies, but do they have an awards show? I tried in a very tired way to look it up, but I still don't know if we can watch these. Hopefully one day we can, and if we can, let me know. So this movie won a Razzie for the worst picture, worst director, worst supporting actor, James Corden, worst supporting actress, Rebel Wilson, and the worst screenplay, to name a few. So, my friends, this brings me to the end of this giant garbage fire of an episode. Like, this was, I can't even talk. This was an introduction to T.S. Eliot. This was an introduction to Andrew Lloyd Webber. This was an introduction to Cats in general. Like, it was a lot for me. And then just learning about how T.S. Eliot's an asshole, Andrew Lloyd Webber is a prick, and then fucking Tom Hooper is also an asshole. Come on! Ugh, is that the curse of Cats? That you're just gonna be, like, demeaned and treated like a dog? Interesting. Holy shit, and that does it for this week's episode of Lucky's Really Long List of Movies. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you took everything that I said with a big fat grain of salt. I'm sitting here and I'm editing it and I'm laughing at myself. And then I just am like, damn, when I don't get my sleep, I am so bitchy. I'm so angry. I don't hate her, you know, but whatever that means. God. Well, that was wild, and I will be back here next week with a whole nother episode under this category of wild animals. And we're gonna be taking it out of the feline area. We're gonna be taking it out of the CGI area for the most part. And we're actually gonna dip our toes back into October. Yeah, we're gonna get back into the spooky spirit. We're gonna be watching Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. And I think he might be the next Michael Myers. All right. Well, thanks for listening and take care of yourselves and drink water. And I'm sorry, musical community, if I got anything wrong. And I'm also sorry, poet community, if I got anything wrong. This one was rough. I mean, meow. All right.